Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soci.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. This podcast is also available on iTunes and, like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, just a gentle reminder, it's that time of year again. It's WFYI's pledge drive. So if you have enjoyed Film Sociology for over 14 years, year 14 is where we're at right now. And you love the film discussions here on the show, on the podcast, please show your support by going to WFYI.org/give. If you have submitted movies that you've watched over the past week, which we've been doing for now over 2 years as a part of the show, show your support. Please go to WFYI.org/give so we can keep shows like Film Sociology going and the Blues House Party and Stolen Moments and other local programming that doesn't involve me. Show your support, WFYI.org/give. And we will get to the grab a pencil portion of the show in a little bit. But we're going to start with two new films that are out, one that's a bummer and one that I really wound up liking more than I thought I would. We're going to start with a drama from Canada called Stanleyville. And this is one of those that I'm thankful that it's short because I wasn't crazy about the content. But one of the things that is lacking is probably getting a little bit – we don't get to find out more about one particular character that maybe would have helped. I probably would have liked it more, but this is the hand that was dealt. We have a woman working in her cubicle, and a bird crashes into her office window, and that gives her the motivation to leave work, goes home, looks at her family, leaves the house, dumps her ring, dumps her purse, and is just going to move on with her life. And while she's contemplating what to do with her life in a mall, a gentleman with a clipboard lets her know that she has been selected at random for a platinum-level competition contest with a truck as the prize. And so she has no attachments and goes in and is – we then go to the majority of where this thing will take place, an office loft-looking place, and there are already four other contestants who have to go through eight rounds of competition to win this car. So then we get stock characters involved in a random contest like this, or has been known for about 20 years, reality television. So we have the quiet one, the very extroverted arty one, the athletic one, and we still don't know why they're doing the competition. Well, we know why they're doing the competition, greed, and the thrill of competition, apparently. But as you're watching this, you keep waiting for the tone to drop. When is it going to turn into Saw or some other horror tropes to it? And it doesn't, I will give it credit that it doesn't quite go down that dark of a path. It does get dark, but not as dark as one would expect. But I think I'm not a big reality TV competition fan, says the guy who likes Food Network. Although I remember when Food Network had cooking shows. It's like the MTV used to play videos guy. So we get to see these people compete, and I think I'm old enough that I remember and still like, for what it's worth, They Shoot Horses, Don't They? Or for a different generation, Hands on a Hard Body. And it's just kind of It's an unpleasant film. I also realize it could be a lot more unpleasant, and a different group of actors and a different filmmaker could have really gone down a much darker, over the top path. So I guess I'm thankful for that. But it's not pleasant people to watch for 90 minutes. And yes, I know I enjoy crime dramas, but it just didn't do it for me. But if you're in the reality TV or cutthroat competition, not Cutthroat Kitchen, that's fun. But look for Stanleyville, film out of Canada. One of the surprises for me is a film called Brute Force. Now, it's not a remake of the prison drama with Burt Lancaster or Hume Cronin. This is Brute, B-R-U-T. No, it is not the cologne or deodorant group. It is a mystery happening at a California vineyard. We start very quickly with Sloane Sawyer, played by Leela Simington, in a really nice, relaxed performance. She is she's just lost her job at a Los Angeles newspaper, and gets the call home to come check out her father's vineyard up in Santa Lucia, up in wine country. And what's been happening is the grape pickers at his vineyard is being harassed. Now, part of it is because they're undocumented, not bad hombres. And the staff house winds up getting burnt to the ground. So there's Sloane gets to find out about the corruption that she already knows what's happening in this small California town. The film has a relaxed live-in vibe about it. We know very quickly through dialogue of people from her past, friends, ex-lovers or potential lovers or people that she grew up with, and some of the politics that goes on around town. Because it's set in a vineyard and because there's some good-looking actors in this, it almost, and I say almost has a kind of Hallmark mystery. You could say on paper it sounds like a Hallmark mystery movie. It is not. It gets to a point where Sloane Sawyer cannot even trust her own father. There's a businesswoman that wants to buy the vineyard, but there's enough suspects and MacGuffins and decent twists without getting too over the top. It could be the slickness and the stiff acting of a Hallmark mystery movie. This is not. In fact, there's a really fun single shot moment at the end as far as Sloane, not just as far as solving the case, but also dealing with her father. I kind of wish this would become a series of films. If Ken Branagh can have the giant, ridiculous broom, brush broom mustache as Hercule Poirot, I think Sloane Sawyer, because she's getting the job done, very confident, very kind of a low-key, minimal dialogue for her, but it works, and I really liked it. And it again doesn't go over the top when it comes to as far as the reveals in the last third of the film. But I really like the relaxed, lived-in vibe about this. I'd love to see more mysteries and then I guess it'll be like Murder, She Committed, where, you know, there's a murder in this small little town every other week. Maybe not a television series or a streaming series, but I'd love to see another mystery from solved by Sloane Sawyer in the film Brute Force, which is now out. So check streamings for it. I really liked it. And kudos to Leela Simington, who plays Sloane Sawyer. I hope we get more mysteries and more crimes for her to solve. Look for Brute Force. Good stuff. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. We will get to the grab a pencil portion of the show. And we're also going to find out if people are actually reading my posts, because I said it is spring pledge time. So if you enjoy film sociology, go to WFYI.org/give. If you've submitted a grab a pencil portion of film sociology in the last 2 years, again, every dollar counts, every pledge counts. But if you've submitted your movie titles to the show, please consider supporting the program and WFYI and all things public radio goodness. And what I did as an incentive, I mentioned this on last week's show, and I put it on the post this week, is if you also submit a movie question, I'll answer it. It might not be the answer you want, but I'll answer it. But I also want to see if people are actually reading the post and not just submitting their movie titles. We'll see. We will see. And we'll find out what's going on is, around Central Indiana as far as events. But I want to catch up on some video titles I got to watch. Cohen Video, Kino Lorber, has put out a and it's been really cool that they've been digging deep into the archives of films in the United States and beyond. Old, new, all of the stuff, all the mixtures. But there's a 1962 procedural drama from England called Jigsaw, or as I like to call it, CSI Brighton. We find out a woman's been having an affair with her lover named Johnny, who we don't see, but she is murdered, and apparently this was based on some trunk or suitcase cases. I'm sorry, the Brighton trunk murders of the 1930s, and then we get two Brighton cops outside of town investigating a burglary that leads to the finding of the trunk with the body in it. And it becomes a British procedural story. And I've been watching a lot of Law and Order at my mother-in-law's, so it just kind of hit right. And it also could be a fun double feature with the film, the American film, The Naked City, another well-done police procedure film. Good chemistry between our two cops. It's uncle-nephew relationship. But some pretty good twists along the way of the procedures. We find out more about her. Well-done flashbacks. And it also takes place the week after Easter, so good timing on my part. I didn't plan it that way. So look for Jigsaw from 1962 on Cohen Video. Also from 1962 is the French film The Olive Trees of Justice. And this is one I had not heard of, but did well at Cannes. And this is the only French film that was shot in Algiers during the Algerian War. I'm gonna say I wouldn't recommend a double feature of the Battle for Algiers with this, but it is a documentary director, his only feature, and apparently was telling the government he was making a documentary about the wine industry. And it's fun because you get to see a lot of shots of the camera in a car capturing street life, seeing a lot of non-actors, and seeing the police and some of the soldiers in action on the streets. The story in this, the feature portion of this film, a Frenchman of Algerian descent returns home to see his dying father, what he's going through as far as his place and his identity in his home country compared to what he was doing in France. And we get flashbacks to him growing up on in the farm. Now his family is living in the city. And, the film doesn't stop after the father dies, not really giving away a whole lot. But pretty ballsy move on the filmmaker's part as far as getting this film made. So, again, look for The Olive Trees of Justice, which is also out on Kino Lorber from 1962. Also from also being released is the 2010 documentary or 2010 feature film from France called My Afternoons with Marguerite. And this is a film I have heard of, but didn't get a chance to see. But it's also a nice understated performance from, of all people, Gerard Depardieu. He plays a gentleman in a small town working odd jobs and has a nice little life going, although he is considered by some in town to be the village idiot. We find out he is illiterate, cannot read. He lives in a trailer in his mother's front yard. We get some flashbacks to not a good childhood from the parents or the school or the friends. This is another film that has a lived-in vibe about it, and it gets to the point quickly. There is a pub, a cafe that he hangs out at with some friends and the staff that he knows, and they know him. And then his life changes when he is going through a park and he meets an elderly woman named Marguerite, played by longtime French actress, and pardon my French, Gisèle Casadesus. And a nice friendship is drawn from these two unlikely characters because of pigeons, and she inspires him to read and start to read more. His girlfriend at first, Depardieu's girlfriend, Annette, nice chemistry between those two, at first suspects it's literally another woman, capital A, capital W, but that is not the case. And so we get to see Depardieu's character bettering himself, pushing the past behind him, standing up for the joshes he gets from his friends because he's actually caring about something else other than drinking and eating and odd jobs and you know, rolling around with the girlfriend. So nice chemistry between Giselle and Gerard. So and in some ways reminded me of Educating Rita, which was a game-changing film for me when I was 13. The whole you're never too old to learn. And so anyway, nice double feature. You could do that. But yeah, look for My Afternoons with Marguerite and so, from Cohen Home Video. And then finally on IndiePix is a 2005 documentary, a short one, less than an hour, called A Life Among Whales. And this story tells the story of marine biologist and animal rights activist Roger Payne. This is the gentleman who discovered whale singing in the early 1970s and helped the early rise of the modern environmental movement. We get a lot of him as a talking head, lowercase t, lowercase h, with really good whale footage. The source music is a problem. I wish there was more action. And there was a famous album of whale songs that was released. And there are some songs. There's about 12 minutes of whale music in a special feature of this documentary. I think this was reissued because of the success of the documentary The Loneliest Whale, which came out a couple of years back. And I understand this film came first. The source music is really distracting. And it's kind of a early aughts documentary style, you'll see. But it still tells a good story. I doesn't have the same emotional punch as The Loneliest Whale, but it is one of those where you have to accept it, warts and all, as far as Roger Payne's story. So, yeah, Songs of the Humpback Whale, look for that. I don't know if it's on CD or streaming, or you can get an MP3 version of that. But, yeah, IndiePix has A Life Among Whales from 2005 as a part of IndiePix Classics. Another older documentary that has come out from 1995 from the journals of Gene Seberg. And this was good timing on me. I'm still needing to watch the biopic about Seberg with Kristen Stewart. The really cool podcast, You Must Remember This, did a piece on a series of episodes about Gene Seberg and Jane Fonda, two beautiful actresses with activist history, and they do address that in this. What I liked about the documentary, again, this is 1995, so we get 90s documentary style as far as talking heads. There are excerpts from her journals that is read in this by Mary Beth Hurt, but we also get scenes of Mary Beth Hurt as Gene Seberg with her on camera, her making references to pop culture that happened after Seberg's character dies. I didn't need that. But we get the background, and if you don't know about Seberg's career, you really should. She admits in her journals to being miscast as St. Joan. She was selected out of 3,000 actresses to play this part. They talk about the curse of Joan of Arc. There's some decent side stories that I wondered was going to lose focus, and it wound up not doing that. She wound up working with Otto Preminger a couple times in St. Joan, as well as Bonjour Trieste, and then changed her image, becoming one of the faces of the French New Wave because of Breathless. And then we get a triple parallel story of beautiful actresses with political activism: Jane Fonda, Vanessa Redgrave, and Jean. Jean, of course, was associated with the Black Panthers, Vanessa Redgrave with the PLO, and Jane Fonda with the Vietnam War. Just a simple side note. If you're a fan of Jane Fonda, the day Jane Fonda dies, stay off the internet. I'm just saying. Because there will be an unleash of ugliness that nobody has ever seen. Just putting that out there. So the other part was Jane, Vanessa, and Jean also had something in common. They worked on films for their director husbands, on more than one occasion. Vanity projects for the men, putting that out there. And in this case, for Jean's film called Birds in Peru. But the film also kind of takes digs at Fonda for, and this is, again, after Seberg's character has died, about the workout videos and marrying Ted Turner. But she, there, anyway, there are the actual journal readings I liked. And the, and yes, they talk about Paint Your Wagon and Airport and being hounded by the FBI and what happened with she had a daughter who died at a young age. But the I think the actual visualization of actually seeing Mary Beth Hurt on screen as Jean Seberg pulled me out of it a little bit, especially since I heard a really fine podcast about her. But anyway, but it's still worth checking out if you're a fan of Seberg or actresses who are activists as well. So from 1995, from the journals of Jean Seberg, some of the, and then the same director had three short documentaries involved in special features, Becoming Anita Ekberg, Deborah Pageant, and Anna, Anna, which was about actress Anna Sten. Check that out. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. And the final film that has been reissued on Warner Archives, and I am thankful for this, although I still would like a Criterion treatment, of the Kevin Reynolds film Fandango from 1985. Released in January of 1985, written and directed by Reynolds. Reynolds had, prior to this, received a story credit for Red Dawn, and he would later collaborate with Kevin Costner, the star of this film, in films like much more known films like Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, Waterworld. He'd work on other films with and without Costner, films like Tristan and Isolde, 187, the 2002 version of The Count of Monte Cristo. This is still my favorite Kevin Reynolds film, and for me, the one of the definitive road trip films. This film, Sideways, and Thelma and Louise. It is set in Austin, Texas in 1971. It's graduation weekend at the University of Texas. And a group of guys who call themselves the Groovers, which includes a then-unknown Kevin Costner and a slightly more known but not really Judd Nelson. And they go on a road trip throughout the Texas desert, and they decide to go even further and dig up an old friend called Dom. And I'm just, if you have not seen the film, I'm not going to give that away. So at this time, Costner was actually known in the movie business because of his role as Alex in Lawrence Kasdan's The Big Chill, also famous because his scenes were cut. But you do see Kevin Costner body parts at the beginning of the film. That is him being prepared during the credit sequence of The Big Chill. Nelson was had started one film of note called Making the Grade. This is the same year, later in 1985, he would appear, and he was 26, playing a college graduate in Fandango, later as a high school burnout in the John Hughes suburban fairy tale known as The Breakfast Club, and then a 20-something adult who doesn't want to grow up in Joel Schumacher's Wine Fest known, and it's with a H, as St. Elmo's Fire. Now, Costner, again, being cut out of this, Lawrence Kasdan would make it up to Costner by having him with a rollicking performance in the rollicking fun Western Silverado later in 1985. And then Mr. Costner's career would take off. But the film, which came out a couple of years after Porky's, some of the ad campaigns, some of the trailers, it looks like a horny teenager movie, or in this case, a horny college guy film. It isn't. It is a road trip film, and there are college-level shenanigans, but the film shows also the heart and vulnerability of these guys. Three of them are supposed to report for Army duty in 1971. One guy calls off his wedding because of being drafted. There's a love triangle, which is subtle and nicely played. Costner, who I believe was 30 when he made this. Now, to be fair, his character, when he gets his draft notice, he is informed by the college that he had not graduated to a new grade. He hadn't moved academically in 3 years, so that kind of fits. But I would say, as I wrote in a review, the films of Judd Apatow, as far as having kind of gross out, obnoxious man-childs. His films are Led Zeppelin. I would say that Fandango is Willie Dixon. And Judd, take note, Fandango's only 90 minutes, and does the job and does it well. And you get beautiful footage of the desert, and but you see the vulnerability and the emotions between these five guys, the Groovers, and their one final road trip. That little area where one major life chapter is ended, in this case graduation, and then the what next aspect of early adulthood and how you're going to handle it. This film is a graduation weekend tradition in my house, at least for me watching it. So I'm glad Warner Archives has now released it. It is also a film that was put out by Steven Spielberg's company, Amblin. This was the fifth film that Amblin Entertainment had released. Now, they had already had, I believe, Poltergeist and E.T., and this was, at that time, the smallest film that was released. Kevin Reynolds and Steven Spielberg don't want to talk about why. I wish they would. I wish, again, thank you to Warner Archives, but I would love this film to get a Criterion treatment. I would love the actor, the cast and the crew are still around. I'd love to hear their stories about this film. I'd love to hear more. I'd love to see documentaries and behind the scenes and interviews about this film. So, Criterion, if you put this out as well as Big Night, I'll shut up for a while. And by the way, I'm very excited that Raging Bull, Devil in a Blue Dress, Drive My Car, and Okja are the new releases that have been announced this week from Criterion. So thank you. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you enjoy Film Sociology, go to WFYI.org/give and show your support to Film Sociology and all things public radio goodness here at WFYI. Before we grab a pencil, just to let you know about some events happening at IU Cinema on Monday, April 25th at 7 o'clock, the 2022 comedy drama Emergency. On Tuesday, April 26th at 7 o'clock, the 2021 documentary Eat Your Catfish. Filmmakers Adam Eisenberg and Noah Amir Arjamand are scheduled to be present for a post-screening Q&A moderated by IU Professor Emerita Kathleen Gilbert. Thursday, April 28th at 7 o'clock, Milking and Scratching, the Handmade Films of Naomi Uman as a part of the Underground Film Series. Friday, April 29th at 7 o'clock, from 1952, Has Anybody Seen My Gal? And then Tuesday, May 3rd, a virtual event at 7 o'clock, the monthly movie roundup virtual edition. So all of that is happening over at IU Cinema. Over at the Can-Can. Coming up, coming soon, I should say, Petite Maman is opening May 6th. I'm really looking forward to that. The Northmen, we're all going to the World's Fair. Northmen's opening on the 21st. We're all going to the World's Fair on the 22nd. Her on April 26th. April 28th, the Indiana Forest Alliance, the Wild and Scenic Film Festival is happening there. As I mentioned, Petite Maman on May 6th. Memoria on May 13th. Both of those you should see in the theater. And May 21st, the Earth Charter Indiana series, Princess Mononoke, as well as May 23rd, Hustlers presented by Side Hustle Economy Company and JBF Media. All that is happening over at the Can-Can. At the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, Indiana, depending on when you're listening to this, Friday, April 22nd, Saturday, April 23rd, 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Blues Brothers from 1980. On Friday, April 29th at 7:30 p.m., a Real Women Vintage Wine event, 10 Things I Hate About You. Saturday, April 30th at 10 a.m. and 2 p.m., Saturday, April 30th, Cartoons for Cans. So 6 cartoons per showtime, about 45 minutes. Admission is 1 can or non-perishable good to be collected for the Interchurch Food Pantry. And then Saturday, April 30th at 7:30 p.m., Brian, take note, a brew and view event, Conan the Barbarian. And then May 6th and 7th, Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Michael Mann's The Last of the Mohicans. And then Friday and Saturday, May 13th and 14th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. All of that is happening at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Before we grab a pencil, there was one other documentary I forgot to mention while we're checking out on MVD Visual. The documentary, Where Are You, Jay Bennett? And this is the musician, of course, best known for the three great Wilco albums, being their Summer Teeth, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, also co-wrote most of Summer Teeth and Yankee Hotel Foxtrot with Jeff Tweedy, as well as the Mermaid Avenue Woody Guthrie sessions with Billy Bragg. And so it goes into his career, and this is a section of music that's not my strong point. So to hear his story, to see how he became a huge part of Wilco and then was just kind of shoved out, and a gentleman who died way too young, died at the age of 45. So I think it's also one of music's what could have been's, great what could have been's. So if you're into Wilco or Billy Bragg and that whole circle of music, yeah, definitely check out Where Are You, Jay Bennett. Informative for me because, this is a documentary subject that I did not know about, and the film succeeds. So it is out on MVD Visual. All right, friends, grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching lately. We start with Chris, who writes, A-Line, The Bad Guys, Charlotte, and We're All Going to the World's Fair. Thank you, Chris. Don't forget, check out the film, yeah. Stephanie writes, Ben-Hur, The Passion of the Christ, and The Ten Commandments. Well, this was apparently because of Easter last week. All right. Thank you there, Stephanie. Eric writes, we are proud sustaining members and the aristocrats, as we mentioned last week, the tribute to Gilbert Godfrey. Let's see. Dustin writes, Easter Parade, The Bodyguard, Jojo Rabbit, and Fantastic Beasts, The Secrets of Dumbledore. Rachel writes, The Ghost of Frankenstein. Michelle writes, POC, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, Sense and Sensibilities. All right, this is not Sense and Sensibility. This is plural, Michelle, just curious. And Siege. Not The Siege, apparently just Siege. I'm old, I'm reading titles. Jamie writes, Justice League Dark and the latest Death on the Nile. Eric writes, World Without End, Ride in the Whirlwind, my Criterion flash sale purchase Blu-ray of Miller's Crossing, which I also bought, Eric. Very good. Thomas Vinterberg's The Celebration, which he deemed whoa. Yeah, it's I saw The Celebration in the theater back in 95, and I think I had already experienced, no, I didn't. I had not experienced Lars von Trier yet. So, yeah, that's a movie you want to put out for family time, so. And The Batman, as he writes. Thank you, Eric. And I know, yeah, The Celebration is also out on Criterion if you're into heavy Scandinavian family dramas. Cassie writes Fantastic Beasts. So, Rachel writes, we're sustaining members too. We watched Battle of the Sexes over the weekend and saw Sonic 2 in the actual theater. Otherwise, I'm just rewatching Golden Girls right now. That's okay, Rachel. That's fine. Dana writes The Latest Death on the Nile. Jim writes The Northman and Untouchable. John writes The Greatest Story Ever Told and The Missouri Breaks. And John actually has a question. Somebody actually listened to the whole post. Oh, boy. John, shorter questions next time. I have a question. Growing up, when we wanted to see movies at home, we made the journey to the movie store. Sometimes the title you went there for was checked out, but we usually came home with something to watch. These were exciting times because you would often take a chance on something you knew nothing about, and if it was good, it would open up a whole new area of film to explore. But the scarcity of only being able to choose that was left on the shelves on a Friday night at 9 p.m. is what spurred this exploration. Still waiting for the question, John, but thank you. Fast forward to today, with virtually every classic and modern brand new movie to choose from at your fingertips, from the comfort of your bed, not to mention the new movies and TV shows being offered by each streaming service. To say it's overwhelming to pick one movie to watch from a virtually endless sea of choices is an understatement. Third paragraph has a question. Obviously, you do this for a living, and to some degree, your movie picks are determined by what gets sent to you to review, etc., your never-ending pile. Thank you, John. But for those of us who don't want to pick the wrong movie, wrongs in quotes, and waste 2 hours because we are offered so many choices, how do we get the magic of Friday Night Find back? Okay, John, thank you. We'll tighten it up next time. But just put in a movie. That's all. I have streaming services, and yes, I have piles, but, and here's the other thing, John, it also is with who you have in your audience, who's with you at the house. I've gone through and browsed through streaming services and they have the categories and the subcategories. And eventually, if you keep doing it, you're going to come across You're going to see titles that appeared in other categories. And that's for me when it's time to stop. The other part, and I will not use this, is, and now, because I know Netflix has it, just pick something. Don't do that. Make your own choices and stick to them. It's like I said, yeah, it's easy for me. It's easier for me because I have physical copies and stuff I need to watch. Not everything I watch on the pile is for the show. So I got that going for me. Now, if something comes up of note and I want to share it on the show, like I did with Fandango, which I know just got a Blu-ray release because of Warner Archives. But there's other stuff. There's the I know I had Taffeta V on the show last week to talk about Gun Crazy, and there's a 4-disc set of Noir that I'm probably not going to talk about those, but I'm watching them. So I guess in this case, as I mentioned, John and everybody else, as I've been saying for the last couple of years, I hope you watch something that is good, that is new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. John, if you're by yourself, take a chance on that. Take a chance on a movie you've always heard of. You heard the title or it has some reputation, and give it a shot. And if you've had a crap day, just put in some cinematic comfort food. But I understand that. I get it, John. I know. I miss those Fridays, those Friday nights. But those, unfortunately, those days are long, long gone. So John also picked, before his question, The Greatest Story Ever Told and The Missouri Breaks. So I guess, then the question becomes, well, why did you pick those? I remember seeing The Missouri Breaks in the theater with my dad. Didn't quite get all of it. And that's another one where, as I got older, I understood it a little better. Greatest Story Ever Told, I get it, because it was Easter just happened. So I would say find a title and stick with it. Or if something, like I said, if you go on Netflix or Hulu or Amazon, and yeah, I know they have a vast selection. I think it's just fun to look through the older titles and see what they have there. Or like I said, find a title that you've never seen before but you've heard about. I remember doing this in my 20s. My first newspaper job was in Fountain County, Indiana. I was living in Covington, Indiana in the 90s. And there were not one but two video stores within walking distance of my apartment, thank God. And that was one where, you know, you would get, and these were small stores. This was not a Blockbuster. You would get one, maybe two copies of a new title, maybe three if it was a huge Blockbuster. And yeah, there's that thing where if it's not there, you don't get it. And so you pick something out. That's why we had the kind of crazy art that grabs your attention, and maybe the crazy art that's not exactly like the film. So the other video store, which is in my head and you can't see, had an entire shelf devoted to John Wayne. And I just started going through. I watched a lot of John Wayne movies in the 90s because they were there. And I'd never seen them. And it would be something with Kirk Douglas, or here's one with Rock Hudson, or here's one with Anne Margaret. So here's the thing. We all pick wrong movies. We all pick out something and you're like, that's not happening. You know, and you have the ability to stop it and move on to something else. Gene Siskel used to say, if you were in a theater, take the power to get up and leave. You're not going to get your money back, and try not to be a Karen about it, or a male version of Karen. I don't know what the name is. But that's hard to do. So and I remember when we were in the early stages of lockdown because of COVID, Emma was home, and because she was a senior in high school, and for a while I tried to do family movie night on Fridays, where it was the three of us and we found something that all three of us wanted to watch. It didn't last very long because she's a teenager and has opinions, and I'm headstrong and have a film show and I have opinions, and my wife's on the laptop. The other thing I would try to do was after getting off the air on Saturdays, I would go home and I would watch a midnight movie at midnight on Saturdays. And that lasted for a while. And then I got tired. So I guess, long story long, John, I'm giving you a long answer to go with your long question. Sorry. You're a good sport. Is just pick a title. Commit to it, and if you have family, hopefully they can come, they can agree and go along with you on this. But sometimes don't worry about the wrong movie, just have the experience. And who knows, maybe it'll be something you like, or maybe it'll be something that your family likes while you're watching. But, yeah, pick a thing. So, you know, 7 o'clock Friday, we're going to grab pizzas, and we're going to watch such and such. But, yeah, find something that catches your fancy immediately so you're not browsing on your streaming channel for half an hour. So I guess I hope that helps. I hope that helps, John, and you, all of you. I understand that out there. So anyway, but John, thank you for actually reading the entire post as opposed to just giving me your titles, because you know when I start a post with, good morning, film fans, that I'm looking for your titles. You actually read the whole post. Thank you, John. Moving back to the list, Bonnie writes The Latest Death on the Nile and The Batman. Taylor writes Molly's Game, Death on the Nile, all three versions. Taylor has movie game. That's pretty good, Taylor. Way to go. King of Thieves, Sherlock Holmes, Game of Shadows, The Spy Who Dumped Me, and The Secrets of Dumbledore. Missy writes All the Old Knives, Puncture, Pieces of Her, Defending Jacob, Fantastic Beasts, and Secret of Dumbledore. Fantastic Beasts, Secret of Dumbledore. Sorry. Craig writes Performance. There you go. Any film with Mick Jagger. Jonathan writes Cleopatra Jones and Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Fantastic Beasts, Crimes of Grindelwald. Wizards and stuff. Do you know wizards are, apparently wizards are immigrants, in, from what I got out of those films. Nick Rogers writes So Cold the River, The Outfit, Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen, Deep Cover, now out on Blu-ray, Criterion Blu-ray, Operation Mincemeat, The Dancing Pig, The Punisher, Dirty Laundry, The House of Ghosts, and Alive in Joburg. Thank you, Nick. Sam Watermeyer writes The Bad Guys, Antlers, oh man, Clerks 2, and says, this is now one of my go-to comfort movies. I need to revisit that. I didn't mind it. I liked it more than I thought I would. I'm just reading a piece, Nathan Rabin's Happy Place, just did a piece on Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and you know, Kevin Smith's job is to be Kevin Smith, and that his movies definitely reflect that. So Michael writes Doomed to Die, The Ten Commandments, and Brute Force. And this is the prison drama Brute Force, not the Vineyard detective story I was mentioning earlier in the show, which you still watch. Doug writes Min and Bill, Notorious, Easter Parade, All the King's Men, Rear Window, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, Ben-Hur, Cocoon, and Rent, as well as Turning Red. Thank you, Doug. Andrea writes Fantastic Beasts, Crimes of Grindelwald, and I finally saw Spider-Man No Way Home. We bought the DVD, and it was worth it. The bloopers, interviews, and behind-the-scenes outtakes were simply marvelous. Thank you, Andrea. Elaine writes Her. Abby writes Enemy at the Gates, Sherlock Holmes, The Greatest Showman, and Hacksaw Ridge, because me and my favorite titles. Okay, thank you, Abby. David writes God's Own Country. Jessica writes The Latest Death on the Nile. James writes Gilbert, the Gilbert Gottfried documentary, Kurosawa's Dreams, and Ken Burns' Benjamin Franklin. Robert Muggy writes Wheel of Fortune and Fantasy, Obsession. This is the Edward Dimitrik obsession, not the Brian De Palma obsession. Tobacco Road, John Ford, and France. It's like Bruno Dumont, but don't bother. Thank you, Robert. Patrick writes Pardon My Past with Fred McMurray. Kurt writes The Latest Death on the Nile, My Cousin Vinny, and Beltrace Movie Night. Thank you, Kurt. And a Netflix documentary on the downfall of Abercrombie and Fitch. Thank you, Kurt. Jeff writes Miss Congeniality 2, Trapeze, The Mitchells vs. the Machines, and The Lost World Jurassic Park. Bill writes David Lean's Great Expectations and two of the three versions of Death on the Nile, 1978 and 2022. Thank you, Bill. JJ writes, God, reading's a skill, friends, The Long Good Friday, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Metal Lords, The Night House, France, Shimmer Lake, and The Adam Project. Pam writes Georgia Rule and Not Without My Daughter. That one had me at the edge of my seat, thought I was going to need a Xanax. I'm assuming you mean Not Without My Daughter, because Georgia Rule is just flipping terrible, and you need Xanax for that, too. Dylan writes Everything Everywhere All at Once, R100, Monkey Business, Singing in the Rain, and The Wizard of Gore. Now, Dylan, I hope, and I know you didn't, you can correct me if I am, if you did a double feature of a Stanley Donen musical and a Herschel Gordon Lewis film. So, well done. Terry writes Bull Durham. Britt writes House of Gucci. Beverly writes 1408, preceded by So Cold the River. Stephanie writes The Batman and put several nauseous emoji faces on my page. Lisa writes Olive Kittredge, Nomad, and Fargo because sometimes I just cannot get enough of her. I'm with you on Francis there, Lisa. Okay. Aggie writes, I need to watch more films. I've been trying to catch up on all this damn streaming TV. Well, we just had this discussion, Aggie, so just pick a film and go with it. If a title you've heard of and never watched, you heard its reputation, give it a shot. Julie writes Windfall, a Netflix movie. Really great and only an hour and a half long. Chose it for length, and we were both pleasantly surprised. You don't need to invest 3 hours for a good movie with a big punch. Although, if you do have a three-hour movie with a big punch, that helps too. And finally, Gary writes The Dresser, Frozen, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, Swamp of the Ravens, Deadheads, Cooties, Train to Busan, Camp Wedding, The Traveling Executioner, Operation Mekong, Swordmaster, Tunnel, Phantasm, The Wailing, Pleasures of the Fest of the Flesh, whew, Violence at Noon, Sing a Song of Sex, careful Gary, Japanese Summer, Double Suicide, Three Resurrected Drunkards, Intimidation, The Warped Ones, I Hate But Love, I Blame Society, Black Sun, and Thirst for Love. Thank you, Gary. And there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching. So hopefully you've been able to watch some movies that are good and new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Whew, that's quite a thing. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's some out there, and there's some on streaming, but find a title and stick with it. Hang in there, friends. We're going to end this week's show with a little audio tribute to Robert Morse, who passed away. I found out about the news on Thursday. Musical theater guy. Credits go all the way back to the 1950s, appearing early on in films like Hollywood Hotel in the 60s, Quick Before It Melts, The Loved One. Of course, his big, big hit, big moment was How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. That same year also appeared in the film versions of Oh, Dad, Poor Dad, Mama's Hung You in the Closet, and I'm Feeling So Sad, as well as The Guide for the Married Man. A year later appeared in Where Were You When the Lights Went Out, and for a lot of people, from 1970, The Boatniks. And was one of those guys that kind of bounced back and forth between movies, television, and the stage. And for a certain generation, like my daughter, and he's best known as Bert Cooper on Mad Men. And I told the story, posting it on Facebook and Twitter. When I started watching Mad Men, I thought the casting of Robert Morse as Bert was a wonderful, splendid little piece of stunt casting. Because, you know, those who know that was his, you know, his big break was being in How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, which is in the same era, the same environment as Mad Men. And as I watched the series, and trust me, I've watched the series three times. Thank you, Emma. But the first time going through it, there, on the back of my head, every time Robert Morse was on screen was, I wonder if they would ever do a little acknowledgement to Morse's talent of song and dance. And spoiler alert on a series that's been done for a long time, but the moment when Bert Cooper, the episode where Bert Cooper dies, and then Don is going down a hallway and he sees Bert, and then Robert Morse, surrounded by office ladies, finishes his role on Mad Men singing The Best Things in Life Are Free. I thought it was just a splendid touch. Big lump in my throat on that, and they did it. So well done. Thank you, Robert. We're going to end this week with from How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, here's Brotherhood of Man. Thank you, Robert, and take care, everybody. And again, if you enjoy film sociology, please go to wfyi.org/give and show your support to WFYI and film sociology and all things public radio goodness. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, Michigan.
Now you may join the Elks, my friend, and I may join the Shriners, and other men may carry cards as members of the Diners. Still others wear a golden key or small Greek letter pin. But I have learned there's one great club that all of us are in. There is a brotherhood of man, a benevolent brotherhood of man, a noble tie that binds all human hearts and minds into one brotherhood of man.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What kind of parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!